Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
So we're waiting for a call from Matthew Modine. It is indeed 9:10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Dude, believe me, I'm looking right now just to make sure. Hi, Casey. This is to confirm your interview with Matthew Modine on September 22nd. That's today, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. At 9:10 a.m. Eastern.
Okay.
Okay.
Because we had a call that was supposed to happen the other
day. Short size Jennifer Lopez.
Right? Oh, my God. That's it. It's Jennifer Lopez.
So we're going to be talking to him about Full Metal Jacket. And normally I would just wait until we get the guests on the line. But there's so much you could talk about in that movie that I think we can start talking a little bit about before he even calls in.
Yeah, if you remember, so Platoon had come out, and you know, it was sort of the definitive, you know, Vietnam movie.
And then, leading up to that, there had already been a lot of Vietnam
Boys
movies.
And Company C and other movies. Full Metal Kubrick, who I adore, and you know, you got me one of my favorite T-shirts, which is a Stanley Kubrick shirt. Mm-hmm. You know, turned his focus on this. And it's just unlike any other. But
yeah.
it also, I think, ends up being one of the most emotional. It has one of the most emotional endings. It has probably the most visceral, tangible deaths in any movie I've ever felt. When Private Cowboy dies,
mm-hmm.
But you're just along and you're riveted all the way through.
So for it to stand out as much as it did outside of those other movies that had come
formidable.
Before,
yeah.
Because Platoon was huge.
Yeah, and a great movie.
It is a great movie, but
this one.
Full Metal Jacket's another level because specifically for the boot camp parts of it, because it you're like, where's this going to go? They haven't even left the damn island yet, and this is already intense as hell.
In classic Kubrick, you know, way, like he did in 2001, as he did with the, you know, you go primitive man, you know, the bone mm-hmm. into the sky, and you take a jump forward to 2001 in space. In here, you go from the boot camp right to Vietnam. There's nowhere landing, and we're getting acclimated. They're right in the thick of it, and they jump right to it.
Yeah, so I'm looking for, like, running time, right? So the running time was 116 minutes, right? So just short of 2 hours.
Yeah.
How much of that was spent at the boot camp? Like,
it's got to be a good half hour. Yeah, right?
I thought it was about half the movie, but I don't know. I've never done the time on it. There's a little thing that I never picked up on until I saw a behind-the-scenes kind of making-of thing about the movie. And so you have Arlie Ermey, who's the drill instructor. He's Hartman. And then you have Private Pyle's Vincent D'Onofrio. And there's a scene where D'Onofrio, they're doing, you know, port arms. They're doing all the drill stuff. And he puts the rifle on the wrong shoulder.
Right.
And Hartman comes over and says, you don't know your difference between left and right. And he starts smacking him on each side of his face. That's the left side of your face. That's the right side of your face. And I never picked up on this, but there's one of the hits when he hits him where Pyle's hat comes up and spins all the way around 360 degrees and lands back on his head. He hit him so hard that it actually knocked the hat off of him. It goes up and spins around and lands back on his head. And they were like, that's a keeper.
Yeah.
We're keeping that one because they could have done that 100 times and not had that happen.
This is a movie that I love, but I've only been able to watch once.
No,
really?
Kidding.
Yeah, because Steve, you talked about the palpable moments, and like it affected me. You know, I carried it around with me for a long time, and had a hard time, so much so that I could never really get around to watching it again.
I must have seen it, Nick, 60 times.
Okay,
I love it that much.
All right, he's on the line. He's ready to go. So we'll dive right into it. The movie's available on 4K Ultra HD, Blu-ray Combo Pack, and digital. Please welcome Mr. Matthew Modine to the show. Good morning, Matthew.
I heard you guys talking about me, so I called in.
Thank you. Listen, normally we never start talking about the subject at hand before we get the guests on the line. But leading into this interview, I was going to lead with, where do we even start? You know, I mean, the movie is so iconic. It's so big. It's a Kubrick piece. You and the cast are amazing in it. I don't even know where to start talking to you about it, you know?
Let's start with two live crew sampling the song.
He's so horny.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how big it was, yeah.
it was. We were talking, Matthew, about the fact that there had been some movies dealing with Vietnam prior to it. And we had, you know, the Deer Hunter. We had the Boys in Company C. We had Platoon. Mm-hmm. But the Kubrick touch with this particular crew of actors – and everything came together. And I remember seeing it, and I'm thinking, okay, how do you top those movies? And I remember when I first saw it in the theater, I'm like, I walked out, and it just lived with me for so long after. And I think a large portion of that had to do with you and your performance and the way you enter into boot camp and the transformation that takes place down to what I consider one of the most emotional, heart-wrenching endings of a movie ever. And I mean, I have to ask you, as you approach the subject matter, you know you're entering a Kubrick film. Could you have even seen at that point how iconic and what a masterpiece Full Metal Jacket would be?
No, the only window into that is Stanley Kubrick, you know, that having known what his reputation was. But you never do. You show up and you do the best you can. You learn your lines and you hit your mark and you hope you don't bump into the furniture, you know, the scenery. So, but I mean, it is a big advantage having someone like Stanley Kubrick and the other Vietnam movies that you mentioned. I think that's the important part, is that we call them Vietnam movies. And what Stanley Kubrick was making was something much bigger. That it's a story about young people. I mean, in those days, just men, but now it would be men and women. It has a universal truth to it, that we're taught our whole life to respect one another and, you know, thou shalt not kill. And then we have in those days, a draft or young men and women join up, and then you have to reprogram them and beat that out of them through the boot camp of initiation and teach them, as Arlie Ermey says, you know, to be killers.
Yeah.
And, you know, to pull the trigger before they pull the trigger.
Just strip what we're taught to not do and then do it. And Kubrick had made one of the definitive anti-war movies with Paths of Glory, which is another masterpiece. And here you are. And correct me if I'm wrong, but when you first received the script, it was really not like a standard script that you'd receive. It was almost like a novel that you were getting with suggestions of scenes.
That's correct. Yeah. It, of course, the screenplay is based on the book by Gus Hasford called Short Timers. And as you pointed out, it wasn't formatted like a script. It was, you know, the person walks in the room and it was kind of, as you say, a suggestion of what might be said.
Yeah.
And then when Lee Ermey, who was the drill instructor, he was the technical advisor that was hired to, you know, help turn the recruits into soldiers, to teach us how to march and use our rifles and, you know, authenticity in the combat situations. And there was another actor named Tim Colcheri, who was the door gunner in Vietnam, who's shooting women and children from the door of the helicopter.
Right.
He was the original person that was cast to play the drill instructor role. And Stanley heard Lee Ermey auditioning the people that were going to be the recruits in boot camp. And these things that were coming out of his mouth were just crazy. So he had his assistant, Leon Vitali, type up everything that Lee was saying. And then they made this very difficult decision, was to let Tim go and hire Lee to be the drill instructor. And, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah. How could you get it any better than the guy himself?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Tim
yeah.
still got I a mean, great in line in with you. Just don't lead him so much. So he did have a standout in that. But asking about Lee, in true to form, during the filming, because that's what fascinates me, because I know the film so well. Did he stay separated from the guys playing the recruits, you and the rest of the actors, just to solidify, you know, the difference between drill instructor and recruit?
No, there wasn't any of that kind of behavior.
Oh, okay.
No. Sometimes people ask me how I was able to keep a straight face with the things that Lee was saying. But I'll tell you this, and I feel safe telling you, because Lee is no longer with us and he can't come and punch me in the nose. but he had the worst teeth, and he drank a lot of coffee and smoked cigarettes. And then he wasn't a trained actor, so he had to memorize all those lines, even though he knew them and wrote a lot of them. He still had to do, you know, for continuity, he had to do take after take after take. And so you, when he was yelling at you, you had bad teeth, coffee, cigarettes, and nervous tension coming out of his mouth. And then, you know, people aren't supposed to yell that much. You're not supposed to yell 12 hours a day.
Right.
And a drill instructor might do it for half an hour a day over the course of the day. And Lee was having to do it 12, 14 hours a day.
Wow.
And his throat started to bleed. And
Then
they got him a steroid spray. So then it at a certain point you had coffee, cigarettes, bad teeth, nervous tension, and then blood and a steroid spray coming at your face. So,
Oh my God!
It was just horror.
Matthew, yeah, is it true that the production schedule for the film was so drawn out that you not only got married, but you also conceived a child? The child was born and then turned one, all during the course of the filming.
We were married before we got there, but the rest is true.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Yeah. But that's Kubrick is known for that. What I was surprised to learn, Matthew, is knowing the very pedantic way that Kubrick is the legend of Kubrick is very pedantic. He's a very meticulous filmmaker. But I was surprised to learn that he allowed room for on-set discovery. Was that the case?
Well, it was always the case, yeah. And Leon Vitali, who had worked with him, as I say, and Barry Lyndon, and then The Shining, and Full Metal Jacket, and then subsequently Eyes Wide Shut. You know, he says, you know, oftentimes people will ask him, what would AI, the artificial intelligence movie that was Kubrick's movie that Spielberg directed, what would it have been like if Stanley directed it? And Leon always says, nobody knows, because Stanley wouldn't know until he came to the set and saw what the actors were going to do. So when you came to the set, you didn't have a casual walkthrough rehearsal of what you were doing. He said, no, you got to do the scene like you're going to do it, because otherwise I don't know where to put the camera. Because, you know, there's only really one right place to put the camera to tell the scene. And, you know, he would pre-vision and dream about and build, you know, sets and things like that. But he really didn't know where he was going to put the camera, what lens he was going to use, or when the camera was going to move until he had a proper rehearsal.
It's amazing because he came from the world of photography. He worked in a camera store. He knew cinematography, you know, like the back of his hand, and understood how cameras worked. But the fact that he would let the scene and the actors help determine his idea of placement is an amazing revelation for me.
Yeah. And then sometimes, you know, he wasn't feeling it, and because he was a really good producer, and, you know, having gone on as long as we did, that you mentioned that we filmed for almost, I don't know, 22 months, consistently. There was a car accident and Lee Ermey didn't work. Vincent D'Onofrio blew out his knee and missed some work. But He, you know, on another person, that would be an out of control, you know, train. And but we kept the budget within, you know, $10 million.
Wow.
Making the movie over that period of time. If that had been, you know, another director, that could have easily gone up to $100-150 million.
I obviously the finished product is a masterpiece, but I just wanted to ask if did you enjoy yourself making the movie?
Yeah, I almost said I was on one of those movies where the budget went like that. It was called Cutthroat Island.
It's okay. It was not your fault. It was not your fault.
Yeah. Yeah. That started out at like 50 and then ended up being like, I don't know, 100. I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars that movie cost. But what was the question you asked?
The finished product is a masterpiece, but did you actually enjoy yourself while making the movie, or was it
laborious?
Laborious, yeah.
Well, the good thing is that a friend of mine gave me a Rolleiflex camera, because you mentioned Stanley Kubrick had a photography background. And he said, you know, if you learn how to use this camera, this medium format Rolleiflex camera, it'd probably Stanley be really impressed, and you could, you know, kind of crack the ice and start a conversation with him. Because we all assumed that he was going to be somebody who was almost robotic and not have anything to do with you. And he was absolutely the opposite. He was a kid that grew up in the Bronx in New York and loved making movies, loved baseball. He, you know, he was a normal guy.
That's so cool.
And So I taught myself to use this medium format camera, and Stanley said, look, if you're going to take pictures on my set, this is the camera you should get. And he told me to get this autofocus, auto everything Minolta. And I hated that camera, but I loved the Rolleiflex. The important part was that if you're going to take pictures on my set, that was unheard of. And so Stanley allowed me to take photographs on the set with this medium format camera. And so I published it with a diary that I kept while I was making the film. It's called Full Metal Jacket Diary. It was published into a limited edition metal covered book with a serial number. There's only 20,000 of them. I'm never making any more. And then this genius from Apple, Adam Rakoff, he said, would you be interested in making it into an app? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, we'll have you read the book. We'll do music and sound effects. And we'll take all the photographs that you took on the film and scan them and do high resolution scans of them. And then we'll make an app. And I said, how do you do that? And he said, well, that's the hard part. And then he spent the next year and a half building this incredible app it's only available on for an iPad. And right now,
well, I have an iPad. Yeah, that's awesome.
Right now, you can download it for free as a celebration of this 4K release of Full Metal Jacket.
Well, just so you know, I actually purchased this 4K. I'm waiting for it to arrive, and so I feel entitled to then download that free app on my iPad. That's very exciting. I mean, this is a great celebration of a great work of art of which you are an integral part, and it's an amazing celebration.
Yeah. So
thank you.
Hey, we appreciate the call. Thanks so much. Yep.
One of the things that you said in the beginning was that about Vietnam.
Yeah.
And the genius of Stanley with this film was that he didn't make a movie about Vietnam. He made a movie about war.
Yeah.
And as we mentioned before, about what happens to people that, you know, and just to tip our hats and say thank you to all the veterans who served in all the wars. There's the scars that we see, and then there's the invisible scars that they carry with them sometimes to their death.
Right.
And that's the psychological scars, the ones we can't see. And that's why it's so important to love and take care of our veterans, because there's things that they know, things that they've seen, like that 1,000-yard stare that we tried to get Private Joker to have at the end of Full Metal Jacket.
Absolutely. Well stated, and good advice to respect and honor the people who actually did this for real and not in a movie. So,
yeah. We know you got to run.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Linda Fiorentino, who from Vision Quest, who's from Philly.
Yo, I was going to ask you about it, because I was actually getting my teeth worked on yesterday. Crazy for You came on. It was just, and then our overnight guy was like, dude, ask Matthew Modine about Vision Quest, but this was not about that.
We talked about Vision Quest last time.
Yeah. But we could do a whole segment on Vision Quest, man. I love it.
When the 4K comes out. Yeah, man.
Done deal. We'll make sure that happens. You are the man, Matthew. And we love you on Stranger Things as well. So keep up these great projects. It's wonderful to talk to you today.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Matthew Modine, guys. You got
something for me.
Wow. Listen, about 5 minutes ago, they called our hotline and they said to wrap it up. So that's why
he kept going. Yeah.
I know he kept going. I'm like, dude, I'll go for another half hour if you want. We can go all day long.
You could just do that on that final sequence in Full Metal Jacket. I'm sorry, but I'm going to, you know, the original plan of the script was, and the original, I guess, the story, which I never read the source material, is that Joker dies. But he was talking about a process, and he said Kubrick thought that the real thing would be that he saw his drill instructor get murdered.
Yeah.
He saw his best friend get murdered. He had all these scars. What's more of a burden to carry, being killed there or to live a life with those memories?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but at the end, when they're marching along, these guys who are just young men.
Yeah.
And they start singing the Mickey Mouse theme, and he's like, we've been through a world of S's, he said,
mm-hmm.
but we are alive. We're alive.
Yep. But and before that, the other scar he has to carry is what he does to the girl. He's got to, you know, and
he has to.
And he volunteers to do it pretty much so. But it's So you know, he's got to carry that, too.
If you guys just go to IMDb and look up Full Metal Jacket, and there's a whole bunch of different cool little trivia tidbits about the movie. And what I just found out was that Joker,
yeah,
his actual name his on his shirt in Paris Island reveals his real name, which is J.T. Davis. And that is a deliberate reference to specialist James T. Davis, who was first officially recognized as the first U.S. casualty in Vietnam in 1961.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Not like that.
Yeah. It's a lot. And so I do that quite often when, you know, we're going to talk to somebody or just, you know, I want to find some stuff out about a movie that I love. IMDb has just a wealth of really, really cool tidbits and then some goofs, right?
And I understand that the movie also meddled in taekwondo in the Olympics.
Right, the Olympics.
Yeah.
So when Joker is on first watch, right, he's using, and this is a movie goof, he's using a 1980s Maglite brand flashlight.
Oh, okay, a little continuity thing. Yeah,
That's atypical of a Kubrick film because he went to extraordinary lengths to make sure that stuff was...
Yeah.
What was there. But I mean,
notices, wait a second, that flashlight didn't come out until 1980.
Yeah, something glaring like that. But I mean,
oh, there's one in, I'm sorry to interrupt, Steve, speaking of another great war film, Saving Private Ryan, that when Tom Sizemore character, Mike, he's taking they first land, and he scoops the dirt into a can, and one says Africa, and one says Italy, and then one says France. That they point out that it was drawn in Sharpie, and Sharpies were not invented until blah, blah, blah.
In Gladiator, when their emperor pulls up in a Prius.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
They start doing hybrid vehicles until
I mean, there were still combustion engines at that time.
Yeah. So I own the movie on, not on Blu-ray because it just came out, but I have it on DVD, and I think I might watch it with my son. He is 13, and I definitely watched that when I was his age.
Yeah. Well,
there are a couple of scenes that are you know, I may ask him to turn away, but...
Well, this is 4K. This is also, so if you have, you know, the resolution and the scenes, especially at night with the fire and the sniper sequence, which is the way the fire is caught and everything, and the... There's nobody, no filmmaker like Kubrick.
Visually, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Some of the films are a little bit too quirky for me personally, but but you can't deny the cinematography and the framing is just unbelievable.
That's his camera ability. Mm-hmm. So like not. Again, you're talking about, I love all the stuff, and I know, but it's not everybody's cup of tea, but like mm-hmm. Barry Lyndon, which is a period piece. Every scene in that movie could be a photograph hanging in a museum. That's how beautiful it is. But this in particular is just as a visceral, emotional masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. He had mentioned Linda Fiorentino.
Yeah.
I heard she's hard to work with.
Yes. So I got a text from a listener who said that he is distantly related to her, and so I texted this person back asking if we could maybe chat with her through this relation. And this listener wrote back saying, probably not, because they had a falling out. Apparently, she's a real pain in the ass. Yeah. The problem started with her mother before she passed away, and so maybe that's one of these people we end up not wanting to talk to.
I think Kevin Smith had a tough time with her.
But what if we actually strike up a friendship and she buys us a fire truck?
That'd be nice.
Whoa! I mean, things happen.
Possibilities are endless.
Fire truck!
Case, I think you should show Seamus. You know, I should show it to my guys. I don't know if they dig it or not, but it's such a badass movie.
The scene where they make the jump to Vietnam, and Surfing Bird is the song that you hear, and they're moving slowly. And they're moving slowly behind. They're having the protection of the tank that's rolling in front of them, and they're going into an urban setting, and you know the one guy, you know, strafes a whole bunch of the enemy running, and he look on his face is like, I did it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Cowboy ever do much after the?
Oh
besides
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
What else?
Wait. I'm thinking. I think
a lot of character work.
Wait. Hang on, I gotta find out who Cowboy
was. He starred in Norma Rae. He played Norma Rae
because the guy who was Animal Mother, he's been in tons of stuff. But a few of the guys.
That's Adam Baldwin. Cowboy, I feel like I've seen in a bunch of other things. Arliss Howard is that guy's name. Mm-hmm. Lost World, Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, he's the crappy company executive who sends them in the second time, who wants who's behind trying to secure these animals.
Okay.
Yeah, he usually ends up playing the dick, actually.
Okay.
And he's such a likable guy in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? He was a medium, you know, that show with Patricia Arquette.
Yes.
You guys recall that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, anyhow, that was
great.
Yeah, that was an excellent conversation.
I love it when actors like talking about great pieces of work that they've been a part of.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like pulling teeth, man. Like... To coin somebody who was in this movie, we had Vincent D'Onofrio on one time to talk about was Law and Order or whatever show he was on, one of those shows, and he just did not want to be talking about it.
Yeah, and it's a shame because you know, it's something that a lot of people love and derive pleasure from, you know, from these works of art, and so maybe they're just tired of answering those questions. But
we think when Richard Roundtree came in here, I'm a massive fan of the black cinema of Shaft and all those classic movies, and he came in, and he almost seemed a little reticent to talk about it. Then when we were off air and just hanging out, he just loved talking about it. I'm like,
what do you think they were actually beating up Private Pile with? I mean, it looked like it was supposed to be soap and towels.
They might add sponges or something in there that just filled out the size. And
Fluffernutters.
Fluffernutters are pretty soft.
Yeah, eat them afterwards.
Yeah. Apparently, they had to do that scene like 10 times.
Really?
So,
I would imagine they, because, you know, you can have a realistic-looking bat, as we learned from the Three Stooges movie.
Yes.
And it looks like you're really hitting them in the head with it. But, they probably had, like, sponges or something in it.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.